This episode of Nintendo Voice Chat is brought to you by Gamefly.
Here we go!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, episode 375. The last episode in September. Soon it's going to be October, the month that Mario is going to grace us. We've got an awesome show for you today. We're going to talk about the little game that could, Golf Story, which you may not even have heard about. We're going to do a six-month check-in with the Nintendo Switch and how it's doing. And we will also talk a little bit about the Super NES Classic that just hit stores, our impressions. And we actually have the reviewer of that system here with us. We've got Jonathan Dornbush on the panel.
Charmed, I'm sure. Hello.
Yeah, and we have Zach Ryan.
Here I am.
As always, Brian had to head back home. He can't be with us this week, but we have a wonderful replacement here. Tom Marks.
Hello.
Making his NVC debut.
And yes. Tom, you're new to NVC. You haven't been on the show. You're kind of new to IGN. What do you do?
I've been here for 2 months. I'm the PC editor coming in, but I love Nintendo. That's kind of, you know, Nintendo games and PC don't have a lot of crossover lot of the time, so it's always been my console of choice is anything Nintendo.
The review you did for us was
an Overcooked Special Edition.
Yeah.
Right, so on. Basically, PC at home, Switch on the go for you? Or
yeah,
you play
pretty much.
Well,
I'm on the train about an hour and a half every day. So like the Switch is a real, real miracle device for me. Like I really, really love it.
Awesome. Big shout out to the fans for supporting us as always. Thank you. Keep subscribing to our YouTube channel at Nintendo Voice Chat. You can watch the show on IGN as well. Of course, we'll have the audio podcast for you every Friday as well. I want to give special thanks to a couple of people who reviewed us on iTunes this week. So, you know, Brill0227 said the one podcast I make sure to listen to every week. Keep up the great work. We will. Thank you. And Patrick Geyser says, I check Reddit and Twitter way too much for Switch news. NVC Weekly still has surprises and impressive breakdowns. I look forward to every episode. Keep it up. Thank you guys so much for reviewing us. If you love the show as well, give us some props on iTunes. It really helps us. More people will discover the show, and we'll eventually be incredibly rich and retire on a desert island. So thank you so much.
Is that really the case?
Yes.
I mean,
the plan.
Yeah. Okay.
Then. If you, it's the end game.
Yeah. iTunes reviews translate into money.
Yeah, now I know to really start chilling those iTunes reviews.
If you get to 10,000 iTunes reviews, that's it.
You're set for life. Yeah. You're a made man.
Yeah, you can
or
swim
woman.
In a pool of switches.
Wonderful.
It'll be filled
Scrooge
with switches.
McDuck of switches.
It'll be beautiful. Couple of things. Tom's also working on a really cool feature. He's reviewing Golf Story for us, but he's working on a feature on how to mod your Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're watching the video version here, sorry, audio listeners, but I've got my Atomic Purple Joy-Con, so kind of throwback to the classic Game Boy Advance days. You know, a lot of beautiful colors around the table, and then there's Zach's Switch too with the gray controllers.
Yeah, this is fine. This is fine if you have this.
But, switch. In a burning room.
But Tom is going to show you how to do that. The shells are actually not very expensive. You can order them off Amazon. Other retailers have them too.
Yeah, and we got these ones. These are the gold Joy-Con ones and white. And then we also have translucent, completely translucent, clear, and a white back. And we're getting an orange clear one in as well. And I'm going to tear open a Switch and hopefully not destroy it forever and show you how to do that yourself.
Post a video of it so people can watch that. Awesome. So we'll be sure to highlight that more so that you can stand out in the crowd with your custom Switch and not be a Zach Ryan.
Jeez. Jonathan and I were just talking about the kind of custom colors that we would want to see for Switch controllers. And I think that personally, I want to see a GameCube color scheme. I'd love purple or orange with the GameCube buttons. I think that'd be really cool. That color scheme. Color scheme. I think would be really cool. Which one did you say?
Well, so I would have taken any GameCube color. I think the orange or the solid purple.
Yeah.
Solid purple is really the one I want just because that GameCube is, I think the Nintendo system I played the most at home when I was a kid. And so I just really want that with me on the go.
Not the yellow Nintendo 64, the DK yellow one.
No, that's Barrett's. Barrett will want that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the Pokemon one.
The Pokemon.
Oh, you want
it?
I just have Pikachu on
face.
Switch.
It was the era of like the IMAX also going like translucent super colors. Remember that?
Yeah.
64 did that too with the bright orange and that like poison green and all that.
Little known fact that no scientist knew how to engineer clear plastic until 1996.
Oh, that's it?
True. Yeah. I've heard Miyamoto found it out.
He did.
Himself.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
Snapple. Thank you, Zach.
That's right.
Okay. So Big week, actually, for the Switch. You wrote a story about this.
Yes,
a lot of games.
There are 18 games out this week for the Switch, which is a crazy week, especially for everyone who says there are no games on Switch.
I don't know if I got them all here, but I wrote down what came out.
Sure, we'll take a look.
So Cinemora EX, a really cool polygonal shooter, came out a couple of days ago, but most of these games are hitting around the time that you're actually watching this show,
right?
Provided you're watching this on Friday, the 29th of September, and that's FIFA 18 is out.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk a little bit about FIFA in a second, but on the eShop, we're seeing Conga Master Party, Tower of Babel, Inversus Deluxe, ACA Neo Geo Burning Fight, so one of the arcade classics brought back, Brave Dungeon plus Dark Witch Story
Combat,
one title, one game. Picross S.
Yes.
Demo, Sparkle 2, Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, Astro Bear's Party, Physical Contact Picture Place, Punkapu, One Piece Unlimited, World Red Deluxe, Binaries, and Butcher. As you can tell, a bunch of Japanese games just from the awesome nonsense titles.
Oh yeah, when I was pulling in some info from like the official Nintendo site, I could tell some of these descriptions were just purely translated on Google.
Right, yep. Just like, straight Google Translate. Yeah.
And there's Golf Story on 3DS. You got Yo-Kai Watch 2, Psychic Spectres, Cult Sep Revolt on Wii U. We haven't heard that name in a while, right?
Yeah.
I feel a tremor in the force here. Hive Jump, Super Ultra Star Shooter, and Double Dungeons came out
on
that
Wii
machine.
Red Steel 5 is coming.
That's right.
it's great. I mean, look, a lot of games obviously are coming out of various quality levels and size levels, and there's some smaller indie games that are definitely worth a look. But first of all, the big one is FIFA 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Simultaneous release. Have you guys seen it yet? I think we've got some footage we're going to show on the video version here, but looks pretty good.
Yeah, we had an opportunity to see it at Gamescom this year and in Germany in August, and very impressed with what they did with FIFA on the Switch. For all intents and purposes, it is a fairly accurate representation of the other consoles' versions.
Yeah.
There's minus the story mode, right?
Yeah.
So unlike NBA 2K, which we had last week, FIFA does do the old EA trick of giving Nintendo owners last year's version.
Yeah.
Right. Let's call it. This happened before in the GameCube age, in the N64 age, where I remember covering games like Madden back then. Like Madden 64 was always built on last year's code because they had to do something custom for these machines, and they couldn't just port games one for one. In some cases, it still resulted in a great game. Sometimes, though, you know, we did get the shaft with those versions. Sometimes we got something extra, like Mario characters in it,
right.
In a soccer game, for example.
Yeah.
This one looks good. So it's a good soccer game. I wouldn't call it the most exciting release in the FIFA franchise. You know, very, very, is it fair to say by the numbers?
Sure.
And then it's missing the big upgrade, the story mode from the other version.
Now, what's your history with FIFA? Are you a certified FIFA boy?
I was a big international superstar soccer guy back in the days, but I did enjoy the FIFA games, and the gap got closer and closer to the point where FIFA just features one. Obviously had the licensed players, all that kind of had the edge for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, obviously we've got, Konami still in the game with a really, really good game.
Yeah, PES.
I have, and we don't get PES on the Switch. Maybe someday, Konami, come on. But so far, I mean, I think FIFA, if you like playing soccer games, you want a good game on the go, it's good.
Yeah. And as I'm a lapsed FIFA player, played a ton in high school because everyone else in high school was playing FIFA, and I haven't really played since then, but having it on the go is a really good excuse for me to want to pick it up again, because I don't like to sit at home and play something that I could watch also, or it feels a little weird for me, but I'm excited to have this on the go. But this is also one of those weird cases where EA has been saying, hey, this is how we're going to test success on the Switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so it almost feels like there's pressure to buy.
Well, but I feel like that's the bummer that we didn't get the version that has the exciting new bells and whistles. Now you could argue, well, you didn't get FIFA on a Nintendo platform last year, so it's good to have everything with updated rosters.
I also feel like on EA's part, it's a little weird that the idea that Star Wars Battlefront or something would come to the Switch is predicated on a less than version of FIFA. It's a little odd, but that being said, as a test case, internationally, I feel like FIFA could probably make up for a lot of that.
I think that was probably the story that went around at EA in the beginning where they said, we don't know what to make of this machine. Let's test the waters with FIFA. Why FIFA? Biggest seller.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Huge game internationally. Certainly, you know, Japan is a big market still for Nintendo consoles. So having a FIFA game there is a good idea. Europe, you know, smaller market, but the game just sells like gangbusters over there as well.
A little inside baseball here, but... 2 years ago, football, if you will.
Two years ago when I started
booking E3 for IGN, when I started booking our live shows, my manager who had previously booked it for years came to me and was like, hey, I'm looking at your list of games. It looks like you've got all the heavy hitters. I don't see FIFA or PES on here at all. And I was like, well, why would we book that? Like, it's not huge. Neither of those games are really perform well with our specific audience, but come to find out that the international audience just flocks to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And every year at E3, those are two of our highest performing video pieces are those live demos. So the audience is there.
And so, to finish the thought on EA testing the waters, I think that was the early story that went around. That story changed, I'm sure, the moment the Switch actually sold out. The Wii did, but the Wii U didn't. Now that the Switch is on a route to success and is actually selling faster than some of the other consoles in the market, I think that's what publishers look at the platform with different eyes.
Well,
so I wouldn't keep repeating that story I'm sure that changed.
That came out a couple months after the success when it was still good, but they didn't know if that would be long-term success.
That's the kind of thing that I think people get kind of confused about when they see a developer like Capcom trying with Street Fighter and Resident Evil, because those are known quantities, right? Yeah. Like, they're not bringing over anything too potentially risky, but also you get a lot of this sort of derision where people see Capcom making statements about, like, basically testing the waters for their further support. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, but Switch sold out so fast. Like, how does Capcom, a company like Capcom, not just have dollar signs in their eyes right out of the gate? And I think that's why.
I actually think they. I think many of them do now. I've got to think after Bomberman.
Yeah.
Konami said, more of that, please. Yeah. Right? Like, that was not an expensive game to
make. You think it'd take time for them to pivot, too, right?
Yes.
Like, if everyone was maybe rightfully wary of the Switch before, because of how kind of poorly the Wii U performed, like, they've had, 6 months now to realize, oh, man, people are buying these things a lot, and now they kind of have to get going on bringing some of their other games over. At least that's what I hope.
And I'm glad it didn't result in a fall that is just full of rushed ports, that they are taking the time.
Yeah. So we'll pick up that discussion a little bit later when we look at the Switch's performance so far, but Picross S came out. I totally forgot to mention the announcement last week. If you're fans of Nintendo Voice Chat, you know that I'm a little crazy over the Picross games.
I've so good.
Loved them for many years, and for some reason, like, I could have the biggest game on the platform. I'll go back to playing Picross on the 3DS on an airplane. I just feel like it's just such a great game to play for hours. You're into it too, right?
Oh, I love it. I love Picross. I've been playing like some sort of web version or 3DS version of Picross for years and years. I don't know what it is about that puzzle game compared to others, because I'm like a puzzle game freak in general, but like there's something about it that's just so zen, where it's like it's challenging but not so challenging, and like it just is that perfect kind of in between for me.
The loop of it is so satisfying because if you feel like you're stuck in one portion of a puzzle, you can just go to another portion and you have to use the clues that you're given, and the clues are there. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
And they're helpers. This version helps you a little bit along when you're stuck as well. The new thing about this version is two people can play at the same time.
That's so cool.
So that's an upgrade. I mean, visually, it's not probably to Nintendo fans, it's not as interesting as the Pokemon or Zelda versions that we got in the past, but it is very clean looking, and it uses the big screen really well as the puzzles get bigger.
Yeah.
If you don't play a lot of Picross?
No, I played a lot of Picross on 3DS. Actually, I owe that to you. In fact, it was probably last year in the same week you had a very long dissertation on the merits of Picross, and then also
everybody's just turned off NBC.
In that same week, the guys on Giant Bomb spent a ton of time talking about Picross, and that was finally what pushed me over the edge. Well, I got to get into this. Yeah. These people are crazy for this little game. So yeah, I played quite a bit of Picross in the last year. So, but that being said, I completely missed that it had come to the Switch, so I'll be downloading that.
Everybody
tonight.
Did. I totally overlooked it. I didn't get a heads up on it either. I just downloaded it from the eShop when it came out, and it's $8. So for a puzzle game that gives you this much. This much fun, I think that's a small price to pay. So I would definitely get that.
And I hope it's a game that they continue to support too and kind of add little DLCs or something like that, because I like that it has co-op, and this is a really good system for it to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the other, you know, there's obviously this ocean of games, and we could be talking about One Piece. I mean, there are a lot of re-releases like Cinemore, One Piece, and all that. But the game I really
want
to
learn more
about
One Piece, follow Mike Mamone on Twitter.
Mike Mamone, Twitter. The one I want to talk about is this little game from Sidebar Games. Sidebar Games, an unknown developer, Golf Story, came out of nowhere, was announced on Nintendo's Direct stream, and everybody's like, oh, that looks cool. It looks like a Harvest Moon golf game. Little background on Sidebar. I reached out to them because there's no information on them anywhere. They're a two-man team out of Australia. They have 8 years of game-making experience between them. They worked on Golf Story for the last year, and they actually started working on this game for the Wii U. And, you know, transferred this to Switch. And I think they should be pretty happy with the reaction from people so far. You're playing it right now for a review.
Well, yeah, and that's such a crazy turnaround to think about, that they've been working on this game for a year. It was announced, what, a month ago?
Yep.
And then, like, on Monday, we heard that it was coming out on Friday. It's just, it's incredible how quickly it's turned around. And to speak to that, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I've played about 7 hours so far, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really good kind of arcadey, silly Mario Golf type golf game, where then you can go out after the golf matches and like help people with their problems and like level up your skills and buy new golf clubs. So it's this weird mix of Harvest Moon and golf, and it's just a very, very cool, weird game.
So I got like very distinct Stardew Valley vibes from it. I haven't had an opportunity to play it yet. I have it on my Switch. This week has been a nightmare. But the thing that stuck out to me more so than even Harvest Moon, the amount of side quests and stuff like that, like kind of screams Stardew Valley to me. And I think it's kind of funny that between this and Everybody's Golf on PlayStation this year, we've got
this golf resurgence.
Right. It's like we've gotten two golf games that have garnered a lot of attention, but are also only sort of about playing golf.
Yeah.
It's like golf is like a mechanic, but there's also a ton of other stuff to do. And I love that idea to shake up a genre and be like, hey, you like golf, great, but then there's also all this RPG stuff tacked onto it, or not even tacked on, but like in addition to it.
Well, especially as like the PGA golf series has sort of disappeared. I like that these are taking the place of
them. Tiger.
Yeah. That didn't help. It reminded me so much of playing Mario Golf, like you were saying, on the Game Boy Color, I believe it was the first release, or Game Boy Advance was also one, Toadstool Tour. I loved those games and how they added those RPG elements in, because they didn't feel like they were just thrown in there for an extra fun. And like this feels the same way. Like Golf Story, it's integrated completely into that, but the golf itself is still really fun.
So for people who watch the trailer and don't know what to make of it, yes, it is a 2D overhead golf game. It looks like a Harvest Moon or a Secret of Mana, like that top-down kind of vibrant graphics.
Pixel art, yeah.
But you basically start this story and it shows you as a kid practicing golf, and then it goes...
I love the opening.
Like, you get this cool opening that goes 20 years later. And it's like, it's super dramatic, and they kind of poke fun at the concept of taking golf too seriously. Like, you'll walk around on a golf course and, you know, there's a weird thing with seagulls going on the entire time, right?
Yeah.
Or geese.
The geese.
With geese.
Yeah.
You can do certain chores, but you can also just kind of talk to people and challenge them to something. Like somebody will say like, oh, you can never hit the ball across to the island over there. And you're like, oh yeah. And then you do it, but you can also drop a ball anywhere.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts about it so far, is that like, while you're just walking around like the golf course talking to people, you can literally just press Y and drop a ball and tee up and hit anywhere you want. You can throw balls for no reason. Yeah. You can do a thing where you throw up a ball and like chip it in mid-air.
But why would you do that? So what's the reason for dropping the ball anyway?
So part of it, I think, is just like there are these self-driven challenges that you can have where you just like not necessarily enter into a golf match, but you can just walk up to a hole and see if you can putt it in, and like you make your own little challenges. But then on top of that, I won't spoil too much or anything, but like there's... In the first level, there are these buttons that are hidden around the map, and if you hit the ball over a tree onto a button, then you find all the buttons. It'll unlock a secret thing, and then you can like get a super special golf rod, you know, that is way better. And it's like, there's all these weird RPG, like you were saying, Stardew Valley elements to it.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool and really unexpected.
And this melodrama on top of it.
It's so charming.
A coach who doesn't want to train you.
Everyone's so mean to you.
Everyone is so mean to you.
You can hit perfect shots and they don't care.
For the first 3 hours of the game, all anyone says to you is your like swing looks terrible. Like you're never going to be a pro. And it's like, oh man.
But even people who have a really terrible swing say that to you. Like, there'll be people saying, you're terrible, look at me. And then they hit the ball into the water and like no commentary on them. It's just like,
I really like the idea that dropping a ball anywhere is mapped to a single button press, and because I like what that does to the game narratively. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine just being at a golf course, like having a casual conversation with somebody, and then just as they're talking to you, just drops a ball and just tees off? Like,
and there's a character in the game who specifically, like, what he does is creates quote unquote golf courses.
Uh-huh.
Where they shouldn't be. Right. So there's this one guy that you can find in each course that will just be like, all right, this hole goes from the snack bar to that hole across the clubhouse.
Right.
And so you're hitting literally over people's heads get to these holes.
Yeah.
No, it's just, it looked like the moment I saw that game on the direct stream, I was like, oh man, like I'm not a big golf game player at all. Love Hot Shots and, you know, everybody's golf, all that, and Mario Golf, but don't seek these games out. But there was just something about that aesthetic, and like you think immediately, you think like, oh, is this like a Stardew Valley, but with a golf story?
Sure.
And like it seems like it was close to that.
It was a really refreshing thing to see it on the direct, and then to have it come out so quickly, because I was feeling a little envious of Sony players that were playing Everybody's Golf.
Yeah.
You know, because like people are raving about that game and talking about how great it is, and then we kind of get like a Switch version of that as well. So that's, there was something akin to it.
When I covered the N64, there was a Japanese game called Kawa no Nushitsuri.
Oh yeah, 64. I played it.
And that one, it's called Legend of the River King in the US, the title. It never came out here, but it was the same kind of approach where you had this top down kind of cool looking RPG, but the core mechanic wasn't battling monsters, it was fishing. It was all about the story that there's this river king, this giant fish that lives in you know, somewhere on the map, and like if only you could catch this. And so it becomes this big challenge, but it becomes this really charming game pre-Animal Crossing about catching bugs and catching fish and just going anywhere and talking to people. Like, I would love to see, you know, a game like that being revived for the Switch, because people, you know, bring it to the US Switch translator. It'd be awesome to have a game like that with Golf Story.
And the one thing I will say about Golf Story compared to Stardew, because it screams Stardew to me when I first saw the trailer too, is it's a lot more linear than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, Stardew, like there's a lot of side quests that you can jump around and, you know, figure out what you want to do in what order, but like there is a storyline that you follow through at the center of those side quests.
You're talking about in Golf Story.
Yes, in Golf Story. Whereas in Stardew Valley, you know, you can, do you want to go farming or do you want to go to the beach or do you want to go mining?
Customize the map.
Yeah,
right?
You can really, really choose what you want to do. Golf Story is a lot more like, this is the path you're on. But like that's not criticism, right? That's just like how it differs from Stardew Valley.
Yeah. Does it scratch the same itch though?
Not quite.
Yeah.
Stardew Valley is a lot of freedom. Like I was expecting when I went to Golf Story that I'd be like, today I'm going to train, you know, my power or something. And it's none of that.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, I guess that just because of the art direction and how similar they look, I was kind of expecting that same situation as well.
Yeah, no, it's not quite like that.
And if you don't know Stardew Valley and you haven't played that game, obviously that's coming to Switch
coming
too.
Coming to Switch very soon.
With co-op play.
Yeah.
You know, this game has two player as well.
Oh man, yeah. Golf Story has, doesn't have two player co-op, but it does have just like kind of classic versus multiplayer.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what Stardew Valley coming to Switch is going to do to my social life. Like, given what it did. Well, yeah, that. But like, also what Stardew Valley did when came to PlayStation earlier this year. Like, yeah,
good game.
Yeah,
the Super NES Classic is out.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Supposedly, we'll find out one yet. Yeah. But
we'll see. The bad news is, if you didn't get to pre-order one, I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun still trying to track it down. The good news is that a couple of retailers and people who are NVC fans working for retailers like Best Buy and GameStop has told us that there will be ample supply. You know, there'll be plenty of systems for people who are walk-ins. You know, hopefully that means even if you don't get one on day one, you'll be able to walk and get one. Amazon doesn't sound so good. Sounds like maybe they overextended themselves a little bit with the pre-orders. You know, another NVC fan tweeted at us and told us that he heard from Amazon that they took on way too much. And so some of the pre-orders will ship, but will ship really, really late and you'll have to wait for them. So
I think that's what's happening to mine.
Yeah. But you know what? You can always keep that in the back of your pocket. Go out, see if you see one in the wild in one of the stores. And, you know, if I see one, I'll pick you one up.
Not to be pessimistic, but I will still believe that when I see it.
Okay.
Right? Like I'm not saying it won't happen, but man, like the track record hasn't been great.
Yeah.
That to the point where them saying this is what's going to happen doesn't quite convince me yet.
We'll see. The good news is Switches are out there.
Yeah, they're finally starting to pop up a lot more often.
Yeah. If you if you follow Nintendo Voice Chat on Twitter, if you want to tweet some pictures of Switches in stock at us, we'll like them and retweet them. You know, help other people out actually find them. But you know, we've seen some pictures from around the United States, at least, that there are now some in stock at Targets and Best Buys, mm-hmm. and GameStops as well.
Yeah, they see, not necessarily are they readily available.
Yeah,
but it's getting
gotta get lucky.
Yeah,
gearing up for the holidays, yep. I'm sure.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
So how is the Super NES Classic?
It's great, according to the IGN scale, 8.5.
Yep. You reviewed it?
Yes, I reviewed it.
Why?
I gave it
Why
8.5.
You? Well, you weren't alive when the Super NES came out.
I was alive. I was a baby when it first came out, but I was alive.
What year were you born?
92.
Wow.
Wait a second.
Hi.
I mean,
came
we were
out
well
in 1990.
We were well into the Super NES era by
2 years
then.
Old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't hold a controller in 92.
You're trying real hard though. That's fine.
Go on. Yeah.
I'm just gonna quietly sit here and not tell you guys that I was born in 91.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Welcome to the birth podcast.
Yeah. I played Super Nintendo in college. Thank you, kids.
Yeah. But it was growing up. My sister had the console. My older sister, and so I had played it a bunch with her and got exposure to Donkey Kong Country. I still have like vivid memories of the underwater level and the music, all of that mixing together.
Oh yeah,
things like Super Mario World and all that stuff. Some of it I came to later, but this sort of wide swath of Nintendo games I think is such an unbelievable library, and I really want to dig into seeing how it was both as a newcomer to some of them. I'd never played Earthbound, Final Fantasy, some of those. I'd never gotten to play those before, but it was this awesome opportunity to revisit classics and try some out, and a lot of them hold up for the most part, I feel.
Yeah, and that's Sam reviewed Star Fox 2 kind of separately as an experiment out of fun, basically saying, hey, here's the longest delayed game finally released, and he gave it a 5, right?
He said
the game was okay, right? And he cited the fact that the slowdown, obviously trying to pull off a polygonal game with open space, unlike Star Fox 1, which was on rails, this one actually has open space and you have to like turn around. But couple that freedom with the slowdown, the 10 frames per second frame rate, and the digital controls, which make it hard to aim in that free space, he said it's actually not that much fun to play. It's a really cool experiment. It's awesome to see a canceled game release, but ultimately, when you look at the rest of the lineup of the Super NES Classic, probably the weakest game.
Yeah, absolutely near the bottom, if not the bottom of the list. From a historical perspective, though, it's so cool, like you're saying.
I think it's just supremely interesting that Nintendo, who is a company that typically has a tendency to dismiss the times that they've messed up, right?
Yeah.
Or not, maybe dismissed is not the right word, but to sort of gloss over, like, you don't hear him talking about the Virtual Boy anymore, right?
They ignored it. I think it'll come back. It'll be cool again. You know? Like, not come back as a product, but come back as something that they'll refer to, obviously, in Smash Brothers.
I think one of the interesting things about Star Fox in particular on the SNES Classic is I see a lot of people in the comments of your review saying things like, oh, why would anybody pay for this? You can emulate all these games so easily. This is obviously a product that's geared for collectors.
Yeah.
And what is more collectible than a game that has never been released and this is the only place that you can get it, right?
Yeah.
So it totally makes sense to me from a marketing perspective that they're going to be like, yeah, we do have another classic system, and also it's the only place that you can get this game that was finished but never came out 21 years ago.
Well, I'm sure you can find it for free and emulate it, but there's also something about the collection factor of that small Super NES and the way it looks, and when you put it on your shelf. Now, bad news, the controller cords are still at less
4.7 feet.
4.7 feet.
4 feet, 7 inches.
Still a little short.
Yeah.
4 feet and 7 inches is a godsend compared to the NES classic.
That's right.
It is.
And on a weekend, like on a Saturday or Sunday morning when I get up and I'm like, you know, I really want to play some Mega Man 2, and my NES classic is sitting there underneath my TV, I'm still... like sitting on the edge of my bed, like pulling the cord.
They want you sitting cross-legged, looking up at the TV like your child.
Sure. And
someone my eyes are bad enough, though. Already.
Someone like Zach, who's 8 feet tall, also can't even stand up while playing because the cords are not long enough.
Yeah, I'm actually 8 foot two. But
the extension cords now with the NES Classic, the extension cords are plentiful. You can find them anywhere. You can buy yourself some. And then the Super NES Classic actually has two controllers in it, too, so you don't have to go on that crazy scavenger hunt for a second controller as well.
Yeah, right out of the box, you have multiplayer, which is awesome for games like Super Mario Kart and Street Fighter if you want to just hop
into
those.
Super Mario World.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Jared, when the NES Classic was in the office, like when they started showing up, and you weren't here.
I was not.
Jared Petty had...
Jonathan wasn't born yet.
Right. Yeah. Jared Petty had a friend of the show, had a bunch of NES Classic extension cables, and was the extension cable fairy. He was just wandering around, and anybody that had an NES Classic, he was like, this is for you. This is for you. It was amazing. It was so good.
He'd clap his hands and say, how delightful.
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. That's great. You had the system hooked up to my desk for a while.
Yes,
and you guys were playing there. It, you know, just seeing how well some of those games hold up, and then how well emulated they are on the system.
Gorgeous.
Made me want to take this thing home.
Yeah, Mario World, Yoshi's Island, a lot of the 2D platformers still look fantastic. Yep.
Super Metroid and looks
Final
incredible.
Fantasy.
Super Metroid, the RPGs as well, like. Earthbound, obviously the art style is a bit simplistic, like it's very simple light and color scheme, but it looks great even in that 4x3 mode is how it's originally based. You can also do a pixel perfect mode, which is a little slimmer to give it a more modern look. And then there's also, if you want, like a CRT filter that's fuzzy, which the NES Classic had as well.
Yep.
These games look gorgeous.
A lot of the games look great too, because that's kind of the style that a lot of indie games are emulating now, right? Like Golf Story could
be a Super Nintendo
that
game.
Super
yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Kind of not look out of place. So it's interesting that the style, like the SNES Classic, is coming out at a time where that art style has come full circle and we're really into it now.
Yeah. And you mentioned the 2D games hold up well. I love the aesthetic of a game like F-Zero.
Yes.
But, you know, I do think it's harder to go back to the Mode 7 3D racers, including Mario Kart. It is a bit harder to get back in because we're used to these fully 3D environments with hills and mountains and, you know, just it's kind of funny when you go back to like skidding around on those flat planes.
Yeah.
But they still, from a gameplay perspective, when you sit down and you keep playing, like they're still very good.
They hold up. All of the controls for almost everything, say for Star Fox 2, feel solid. It was that thing of Super Mario Kart for me, the horizon line I didn't love, and so as things are popping into place, it doesn't look great.
Yep.
But the way you can drift around corners and the way you can understand the speed of that game is still very on point.
That game is fast as hell, too.
Yes, yeah.
And then, you know, obviously with Mario RPG, a classic Square Enix / Nintendo co-production there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, Squaresoft at the time.
Yeah. Right?
There was no merger yet between the two RPG giants, right?
Yeah.
We would have never thought about Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest, the makers actually combining into one. That's crazy. But it happened.
Yeah.
But it's awesome to see that game on that platform.
It's great that that's there because I think it speaks so much to even something like on Switch with Mario plus Rabbids, like the way that Nintendo is now reaching out with third parties again. There is a history to that all the way back then. And also just Mario RPGs, like Mario and Luigi is back now on 3DS. Obviously, that has sort of its influences come from RPG, clearly. The library on the whole, like these are genre and franchise defining games in so many ways. And Link to the Past, Super Metroid, Super Mario World. Yeah. They're all still so great to play. Like, I played them dozens of times before.
It speaks wonders to the lineup of that system where you can say Link to the Past and Pear's like, oh man, I forgot.
Yeah.
You forget about Link to the Past.
But
I forgot about Link to the Past. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. So what are your favorite games on the machine? What's your top game to play?
So the one revisiting that I already played, I say Mario World. I just love exploring that game and finding all the secrets. It's so perfect.
For me, it's Link to the Past, for sure. That's one of my favorite games of all time, but then it sits next to Super Metroid, and you're like, oh man, Super Metroid is one of my favorite games of all time.
This
is Final Fantasy.
Your Super NES Classic shows up, you unbox it, you plug it in. That's the first game you're going to play is Link to the Past?
I don't think so, because I know that game by heart.
Sure.
I know everything about this game. I think I'll go to a game that I haven't played in a while, like Super Castlevania. You know, when you guys hooked it up, I played Ghouls and Ghosts.
Yeah.
So I
It's Ghouls and Ghosts.
It's Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
That game is hard.
And I was
Super Nintendo game.
Screw this game. I got so mad again. I'm like, I want to get to the second level because it's some of the best music in any Super NES game. And I'm like, getting to the second level. Like, you start
getting just go to YouTube and listen to it.
Yeah.
That game is
brutal. No, but I'll probably play Super Castlevania first, just because I'm a huge music
fan. I'm really looking forward to playing Castlevania. I haven't played Castlevania since probably I played it on the Super Nintendo.
But then the holy trifecta of Super Mario World, Link to the Past, and Super Metroid being on there. What about you?
Super Mario RPG is a game that is very near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that game. But honestly, I think my top pick is Kirby Superstar. That collection of games. I used to play Kirby Superstar when I was a kid, like, nonstop. Mm-hmm. And specifically the Great Cave Escape. I can't remember the exact name of it, but the Great Cave Escape, like, mini game within the Kirby Superstar package was just, like, it's a phenomenal game within a game within, like, you know, it's this really, really great thing where it's Kirby, but you're collecting all these hidden secrets around. And then there's also the Milky Way Galaxy one where it kind of turns the copy ability on its head where you can't copy enemies, but you find their powers and can go back to them every time. I think that Kirby has always been, like, probably number one or two. Like, maybe Zelda's number one and Kirby's my number two Nintendo thing. And so, like, just a collection of some of the best Kirby games ever made is really hard to resist for me.
Yep.
Yeah. Yoshi's Island.
Really?
Yeah. It's still so pretty.
Yeah.
I said holy trifecta, and now it's what's a quadfecta?
It's funny because Yoshi's Island came out so late in the Super Nintendo's life cycle, and it was marketed here as Super Mario World 2. Because I think Nintendo was afraid that American audiences would see Yoshi on the front and think that it was a puzzle game. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's sort of this, like, I don't want to say cult hit, because a lot of people love Yoshi's Island. A lot of people say it's one of the greatest platformers of all time.
But it's not the one you mentioned first when you talk about the Mario platform, right? Or the Nintendo platform.
But it's such an amazing game, and it's hard, and it's long.
Yeah.
And it's something I haven't played it in a really long time. I haven't played it in probably... I played the GBA version.
Yeah.
It was probably the last time I played it, but that doesn't count because didn't have the SFX chip running in the background. It did have some cool extra levels, though, that I wish that they would have implemented here.
You can tell they in the quest to get this game emulated properly, because it did use the Super FX chip, too, right? It looks like Nintendo touched the code a little bit. Mm-hmm. They changed the look of the font
touched the code, they got dizzy?
You don't know if you know don't know that level. It's the trippiest level in all of Nintendo.
Touch Fuzzy, get dizzy.
Oh yeah,
it's like literally goes. Burr, 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 burr. Everything goes like wavy line.
Did you know that friend of the show Justin Davis still owns the domain name touchfuzzygetdizzy.com?
Wow.
No,
that's great.
No, I didn't. There's so many things I don't know
about Justin.
And then when I know them,
yeah,
I don't know if I wanted to know
his Where's Waldo Google Doc.
That's great. So you recommend getting this thing?
Obviously,
you're calling it great.
Yes, I think if you can. One thing that we briefly touched upon, I think just the RPG library in this is so stacked with Final Fantasy, with Super Mario RPG, with Secret of Mana, and with Earthbound. Yep. There's so much just there.
Yeah.
If you like RPGs, like that, have to play that.
You're talking about 160 hours right there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Of great RPGs.
Yeah.
160 hours of like four of the best RPGs ever made.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, full disclosure, when you review the SNES Classic, I don't think anybody expects you to play through the entirety of every game.
I did
on
not
that.
Play all.
Yeah. So when you say you played, when you played Final Fantasy VI, and that's a game you haven't played, how much did you play? Like, out of curiosity.
So for the RPGs,
Final Fantasy III.
It was a mixed bag for me time-wise, how much I spent. Like, if I know Super Mario World, so I play for an hour and I get it. Some of the RPGs, obviously, were on a truncated timeline, too, to get the review together. For the RPGs, I tried to spend at least a couple of hours in each of them just to get immersed in the world, and obviously, a lot of them start slower. I wanted to get more immersed. I'd say probably at least 2 to 3 hours for each of those was what I attempted for.
Well, on behalf of this panel and the room at large outside, I would just beg you to finish Final Fantasy III.
All right, give me 60 more hours.
Now that you've started
Probably
the greatest RPG of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm excited to get my own, because everything that I started
it's all saved
that
on
I never
that.
Played machine. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. So if you want to play some classic games, sounds like this thing is good. If you want to, you know, go back to the Super NES age, and if you can find it, maybe you can buy the Super NES Classic. Okay.
Hello there. Would you like to save money and play more video games? Well, let me introduce you to our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. At Gamefly.com, you pick your favorite games and have them mailed directly to your door or mailbox. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. You can try your favorite games before you buy and keep the games as long as you want with no late fees. So if you're stuck on a boss fight or having a really good time, it's not a big deal. You can cancel at any time, and they also offer movie rentals too. Head to Gamefly.com/voicechat and start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out two games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer, again, by visiting Gamefly.com/voicechat. Now go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days right now.
Let's go to the next topic. So the Switch came out more than 6 months ago, so we feel like it's a good time to check in and see how the system is doing. I'd love us to actually give our ratings and our feedback on how we feel the system is now at this point in time, you know, 6 months in, from a hardware perspective, from a services perspective, and from a game lineup perspective.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we'll go through that. But before, just kind of check in on sales performance. I think the last official number we got was from July?
July, that was the last number they gave.
Yeah.
So we can assume it's a little bit over, but they're at that number was 4.7 million worldwide.
Yeah, and I mean, anecdotally, whenever there were units in store, they disappeared from stores.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Reggie in an interview recently said that he felt they were doing really well in supplying stock, actually. It's just that the system is in high demand and selling out. You know, take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, there would be more in stores if you were meeting demand and then some. But it's good to see that the system is a top seller. Out of the 6 months that it's been available in the US, it was the best-selling console. But overall, the PS4 was still ahead. You know, obviously, it was out January, February, before the Switch came out. We'll see if that's still true at the end of the year, because you'd expect a new device to outsell one that's been in the market for a couple of years. So,
well, and you still have to see
good story for Nintendo.
We'll still have to wait and see what the impact of Xbox One X launching in the holiday window does as well. So.
For sure. So it's going to be a really interesting race to watch. As far as kind of sales performance in the first month went, right? The system sold almost a million units in the US alone.
I believe it was 906,000 was the number they gave, and it was 500,000 in Japan. And yeah, my favorite thing about that launch month was, we talked about it last week, that Zelda had over a million copies sold, which means more copies of Zelda were sold than there were systems that month. It was a huge first month.
What did you say? It was like 102% attach rate?
Yeah, it was like a 102% attach rate, which is amazing.
But and then I think actually the success in Japan is one to watch over time as the software lineup develops too, because it did outsell the PS4, you know, launch-to-launch comparison in Japan, which, you know, Japan, as you know, the market has transformed. More and more mobile players, you know, the biggest, highest played games were mobile. The Vita actually did pretty well, and certain franchises like Monster Hunter, you know, blew up on the portable side, you know, on the 3DS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were certain games on the Vita that performed really well. Now you've got the Switch in the market. That's the first device to really be both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see continued success with this machine if it gets some of the Japan-friendly franchises.
Yeah, long-term with Monster Hunter and the few other right franchises.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The Dragon Quests and all that will definitely help fuel that machine out there.
Bethesda games as well.
Yeah.
Doom and Wolfenstein.
That's going to be interesting for the US market, certainly, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, some big stuff coming. So I wanted to take a look at, you know, I think the most exciting thing to look at is the game lineup. So, you know, if you were to judge Nintendo's first second party lineup for the Switch so far, 6 months in, we had games like Breath of the Wild. We had a new franchise
That first one?
Never heard of it.
Breath of the Wild. It's this new Altoid flavor. Then they have ARMS, which was a unique original game. We had Splatoon 2, so a full-fledged sequel to one of the coolest games on the Wii U, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Mario Kart 8 Deluxe as a re-release, and, you know, a host of smaller titles as well. It feels like, you know, every month there's a Nintendo franchise dropping. Obviously, we've got Fire Emblem Warriors coming up. How are you feeling about Nintendo's support for the first 6 months?
I'm feeling more like middle of the road about it. Like, I don't mean to disparage any of those games, because I think it's a weird thing for me, because, like, I think every game that they have put out first party, I've really enjoyed, right? Like, I think all the games themselves are really, really good, but I don't know. Like, they don't all appeal to me. Like, as like my, like, I'm not huge into fighting games. So like, ARMS was very, very cool and I liked playing it, but like, I wasn't crazy about it. Right. Like, it didn't do much for me in terms of the system. Like I appreciate everything they've done and I really think they've done well. I just kind of wish there was like I really still wish that Mario Odyssey was out earlier in that console's life.
In the first 6 months?
Yeah.
Man, you are demanding.
Interesting. I wish it were out later.
Really?
I'd be okay if it came out in March. Yeah, there's too much to play. I'd be okay if it was like a, here, 1 year anniversary release of the Switch. Here's Mario.
Yeah.
Like, that's honestly what I would rather.
I can be into that. I feel like first party wise, Nintendo has done some interesting things, right? Because they launched a game with Zelda, which, as far as I know, well, Twilight Princess, I guess, on Wii. It's not a common occurrence that a new system launches with a Zelda title, and obviously not one that is so universally well-loved.
And they took the same approach, right? Capping the Wii U with the Zelda title and releasing that same title on the Switch, so analog to Twilight Princess.
Right, very similar. That in and of itself, I feel like that one game, to me, is enough to warrant, obviously it was enough to warrant a purchase of the system. I feel like it's a strong enough title that if you're giving a rank on a numerical scale, that would bump it to like a 7 to me alone this year, because it's like, I played that game more this year than I've played any other game.
Yeah.
I have hundreds and hundreds of hours. Maybe like 200 hours. But anyway.
I think I have 150.
Yeah. So I think that alone is worth the price of admission. But then also, I think that they're doing interesting things, taking risks on new franchises like ARMS, which I agree. Like, I was into for a while. I haven't picked it up in a long time, but I think it's good to know that they're
But you love clowns.
I do.
Yeah.
But like, looking at what they did with Splatoon on the Wii, or the Wii U, and replicating that with a game like ARMS and saying like, well, here's something weird that we want to try, so here it is, enjoy it.
Yeah.
But then they've also done a really smart thing in getting an express sequel in Splatoon 2 out. And then they've kind of taken an interesting approach with games like Mario Kart 8 and Pokemon or Pokken Tournament, bringing those over from Wii U and kind of covering all their bases from a first party angle. It's like, well, here are, you know, we've got a couple of fighting games and we've got this giant open world action adventure game. Mario's coming this year. Xenoblade is coming this year.
Yeah.
So I think by the end of the year, I would expect my score to jump up to like an 8 or a 9, because they really have done a great job first party of getting all those important bases covered.
I think
in the
you
first
guys
year.
Are way tougher than I am. Like, when I just think about, certainly by the end of the year, we would have had a Zelda game, a Splatoon game, a Mario Kart game, a Xenoblade game, a Pokken game, a Mario game. That's a freaking crazy first party
it's
lineup.
Insane.
Like, if I'd apply that to PlayStation and Xbox, you would have had like every single franchise that they hold dear released in the course of the year. Like, I actually think that is super impressive. I would say the one thing against the first party lineup being like a 9 or a 10 for me in the first 6 months is that Zelda was available on two platforms. It had, if that had been the sole exclusive game as a critic of, you know, how the system is doing, how the lineup is doing, I would have probably given it a 9. Like, I feel like the first 6 months have so many varied titles. And Pokken missed that like 6 month cutoff, you know, if we said it at the beginning, September 3rd. But like, they were just having Mario Kart as a re-release, which is a really strong game. But then having an original Zelda, Splatoon, and games like ARMS, to me is pretty impressive first party lineup. I'd give it an 8, honestly.
Yeah, I'm right with you. Especially, I think the cadence of releases was really smart, of how it was one major game sort of per month. Yeah. Obviously, some of that was leaning on a third party game like Mario plus Rabbids, which is a unique partnership. But I thought that schedule worked so well for the system, and especially like you were saying, all of these amazing games in one Nintendo year. Like, I think it's one of Nintendo's strongest years
ever
recently, for sure, but ever. Yeah,
very you guys possible. Are convincing me now. I feel like I opened too low here.
It's good.
It's okay. No. It's a discussion.
I will
agree. Like, if you think purely about first party, like, and by the way, I lived through covering the droughts of Nintendo, where like you're waiting for a couple of months to get a rare game or something. Yeah.
Sometimes I think about Jose and the Wii U era and how he must have had to just like drag this show across the finish line sometimes, because there was just months of no news or news that was like whatever, you know. Yeah. So,
but my barometer was always going into Blockbusters and seeing the Nintendo shelves just slowly get smaller, right?
Yeah, all that. Remember Blockbusters?
But I think what you're saying is totally fair and kind of something I didn't really put into that perspective of like, man, Nintendo has released a lot, is releasing a lot of games this year. I guess where my skepticism comes from is more like, it felt like some of those games were definitely just like playing catch up. Like the Mario Kart Deluxe is a phenomenal game and I don't regret buying it in any way, but it's also Mario Kart 8.
It's a revisit. Yeah, for sure.
And like you said, with Zelda being on the Wii U and Splatoon 2 feeling very much like a kind of like Splatoon 1.5, a very, very good game as well, but not like a huge renovation of that series. Like, I guess that's where my skepticism came in, is because it's like a lot of stuff, but it's a lot of stuff I'd seen at the beginning of this in the first half of its year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. So let's look at third parties. And I'd say, you know, obviously we can talk a little bit about indies too, but if we look at the core third parties, the big guns, just so you guys know, I kind of looked at the 6 month mark of game releases. It was 128 games had come out for the Switch. Of those, 96 digital and 32 on cartridge. And, very heavily weighed on the arcade side. Obviously, we had the Neo Geo re-releases, so like 23 of those. and then the rest was, you know, lots of action games, lots of puzzle games, lots of platformers, action adventures, you know, if you count Zelda and games like that of that ilk in there, there were 10 of those. And then a couple of shmups, like side-scrolling shooters, space shooters, you know, 4 of them. 0 FPS. Mm-hmm. 0.
Yep.
1 shooter, Splatoon, a third-person shooter, luckily only 1 board game as well, because I feel like, you know, the Wii suffered from like the party variety board game disease.
I don't hate Fortune Street, man.
3 RPGs, 3 racers. So I mean, 4 strategy games. They had a pretty good overall lineup of titles between indies and the third parties. But when you break it down and you just look at the core third parties, you may find this interesting. So Bandai Namco, 5 titles. Mm-hmm. Biggest supporter, Capcom 1, Activision 1, EA 1, Konami 1, Microsoft 1. Because we've got Minecraft on the system, right? Oh. Sega 2, Square Enix 1, Take-Two 1, Ubisoft 3, and Warner Brothers 4, obviously with the Lego game. So biggest supporters were Bandai Namco.
Warner Brothers.
Very close with Nintendo, worked on Smash Brothers with them, obviously. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers and then Ubisoft. How do you feel about the kind of support from third parties in the first 6 months?
It's obviously not as much as I would have liked, but I understand why. I think the support that was there from certain companies was strong. If you look at, I think, Ubisoft and obviously WB trying to be parallel with the other systems. Yep. For me, I prefer it this way if it's a slower roll. Whereas I remember the Wii U launch, it was, hey, you played Mass Effect 3 already, right? Well, here it is again, kind of on the Wii U.
He is Batman. He is Assassin's Creed. Yeah.
Which is not what I want from a Nintendo system. I don't want 6 month catch up like that. So as much as I would have rather seen more support, I'm glad we didn't get that version of support.
Well, I mean, you'll get a little bit more catch up with the Bethesda games coming out.
Yeah, and definitely, there's a bit of it.
Wolfenstein is not day and date either.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see a little bit of that. But I don't know. I mean, like looking at, I was hoping for more support at launch for the system simply because it is so different. Like the Wii U, I understand why developers and publishers were not that hot on the device. You know, not only didn't it move forward, technology forward significantly in that generation, it just kind of like a lot of people looked at it and said, why? Whereas like with a Switch, you say, oh, yeah, there is a reason for this thing, and like it kind of can connect the best of both worlds of handheld and mobile games and console games. This is a little, I wouldn't give the third parties very good marks so far from just kind of breadth of lineup perspective, but having like the bright stars like Ubisoft, like the Rabbids game on the platform, I would absolutely say that's quality software we want to see more of.
Yeah, I think overall I would say that the third party support has been fine, with the exception of a couple of real bangers like Mario plus Rabbids, you know. Mm-hmm. It actually kind of surprises me to hear you say that you were surprised that more third parties weren't supporting the Switch out of the gate. Because, like, if I was Dr. Ubisoft, president of Ubisoft Incorporated.
Yeah, that's his name.
Ubisoft. Or Capcom, Johnny Capcom. Yeah. If I'm looking at the Switch and thinking about, do I want to put my games on this machine? It's like, well, We had a good run back in 2006 with the Wii for about a year, and then that kind of shut off.
Yeah, a lot of people were late on that one, too.
Yeah. And then Wii U, not so much did we have a good time there, so maybe we'll wait and see. You know. And then obviously, like, Johnny Capcom is taking that approach, and a lot of these companies, I feel like, are taking that approach. So
in hindsight, a little short-sighted, because no generation has been the same.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could have said that about the PlayStation or the Xbox. Or, oh, let's not support the PlayStation as much this generation.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any international multi-million dollar company that is willing to run like arms open to new software like this.
I think
like,
at least in this case though, you could have ported some of your greatest hits, right?
Yeah,
like there were certainly some Vita games that should have made it out to the Switch really quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't mean to disparage the performance of the Switch or anything, but there are some easy ports where you had plenty of hardware power to spare to make these games run wonderfully well, and you didn't have to like think about like, oh, how do I squeeze an Xbox One or PS4 game into this, into the limited space of the storage format or the lower performance of this machine. There were lots of big 360 and PS3 games that could have been out at launch or in the first 6 months. And that's why ultimately I would give this third party lineup a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right.
You know,
there.
For some of the you know, it was cool having a Bomberman game. It was it's cool having a Puyo V Tetris game, and it's great having Rabbids, Mario and Rabbids. Mm-hmm. But just kind of like you could tell they're just all dipping a toe in. Mm-hmm. You feel the same way?
Yeah, no, I do. I think I'm about there as well, like a maybe even a little lower, like a 4 or 5. Yep. And that's not
maybe
to
I'm being generous,
Rabbids.
Yeah.
Cuz Rabbids was I mean, Rabbids as you guys have said is like the exception to any sort of rule with the third parties so far. I'm more hopeful, I think, with third parties. Like I think it's not hasn't been great yet, but I'm interested to see what the reaction to FIFA 18 is, and I'm interested in seeing how these Bethesda ports are kind of welcomed into the fold and that sort of thing, because I think that, like you're saying, a lot of these third parties were very wary given Nintendo's history, and it's like now maybe hopefully they're going to say, oh, hey, this is actually going great, and start bringing their stuff, and I really, really hope that over the next year we just start seeing a lot more third parties.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, what do you think? Number one, what would you rate the general third party lineup, not counting the indies?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think probably like a 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd probably go 5 at this point. Yeah. But Mario plus Rabbids would may sway me towards a 6. But
and 5. And granted, not. I mean, if you go back and look at console history, it's not like consoles always launch with amazing support in the first 6 months. There's a ramp up period. But, you know, I do feel like when I look at Square Enix, I'm like, I think it's great that we have a title from them in the first 6 months. But it was I Am Setsuna, which is a good game, but it is a lighter, smaller Square Enix game. If we had something like Octopath Traveler or, God forbid, a Final Fantasy, anything like that, or, you know, bigger, you know, from the Enix side, something from the Dragon Quest franchise, something bigger like that in the first 6 months, that would have been awesome.
I'm including the demo of Octopath Traveler.
You're including that one. Okay, that's fair.
That'll bump it to a 5.
It's a 5.5 already on the scale. So compare that, though, if we look at 2016's top-selling games, right? So obviously we don't know what the top sellers will be of this year. I mean, Zelda and Mario look like good contenders to be in that top 10, but obviously you have last year's top seller, Call of Duty, in there as well. Yeah. So Infinite Warfare, Battlefield 1, The Division, NBA 2K17 was the number 4 selling game last year. Madden NFL 17.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Grand Theft Auto 5. I feel like every year, every list will have Grand Theft Auto 5 in it until the end of days.
Mm-hmm.
Overwatch, and that's not even including all the sales on Battle.net. Call of Duty Black Ops 3 still in the top 10.
Yeah.
FIFA 17 and Final Fantasy 15. So those were the top sellers last year. And if you look at which games we're getting this year, we got NBA 2K17 already. We're not getting a Madden, which is kind of cray. we're not getting GTA yet, which I gotta think it's just a matter of time. Crazy.
GTA 5?
Fishing term.
GTA 5?
GTA 5.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just a matter of time until we're seeing that.
It's gotta depend on what their internal plans are. If they're already working on 6 and it's way closer than we think, maybe not. But with Red Dead coming, I kind of doubt that. And I think you're probably right.
The only challenge with GTA 5 is that you have to keep on supporting one additional version as part of the online rollout.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
You have to create new assets and all of that. Or maybe not, right? Like if 360 and PS3 are supported, supported with the stuff, you can keep going here. Certainly porting the Xbox 360 and the PS3 versions to the system is would not be a problem. It would not be that difficult. But Overwatch, that would have been an awesome game to get on this platform. Obviously, a little bit harder to pull off. But I'm mostly surprised at not seeing Madden, not seeing anything from the Call of Duty and Battlefield camp here.
Yeah,
because certainly they could have gone back to their catalog titles and brought another title over here.
Sure. I'm holding out for Overwatch too. I think that has chance. Because that game on PC runs so well. They've optimized that game so incredibly well that I think it's something like over 20% of the PC players who play Overwatch are playing on integrated graphics. They're playing on laptops without GPUs, right? So I can't imagine. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff you have to unpack with Battle.net and like how they do their online stuff, but I can't imagine that game would be like incredibly difficult to bring to the Switch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. And I'd say that knowing that game development is way, way, way harder than I ever think it is. But yeah.
How do you feel? I mean, are you a Division guy? Did you play that game?
I played that for a bit and drifted away.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I didn't gel with that one. But, this year's Division is called Destiny 2, obviously.
Right.
Right? And having Destiny out, Zach, how many hours have you played?
Just an embarrassing amount. A shameful amount of Destiny 2 in the last couple of weeks, yeah.
And that's that's obviously a title that relies on a great online infrastructure, co-op play, good voice chat, all of that we'll get to in a second are not yet at home and on Switch and that they're still working on. But, interesting, certainly an interesting lineup so far, but I would love to see some of the heavy hitters come across.
Absolutely.
Indie titles, just briefly.
9 out of 10.
How do you guys, 9 out of 10? Yeah.
Seriously, I mean, Nintendo has done an amazing job of curating indies this year and putting a select handful out in front of people, giving a major push towards some games and then also saying, by the way, outside of these games, which we have introduced to you and love, there's also all of these, which we've also certified and put on your system. So have at it. Like, I think it's incredible the amount of indies that they've brought to the Switch.
Shovel Knight has amiibos. Like, who could have seen that coming?
And they're so good looking.
They're really good.
I'd go a little lower.
Me too.
Because my whole thing is, I think they've been great at showcasing indies.
Yeah.
But a lot of them haven't come out yet. Mm. And especially great ones. There are some great ones, but so many of the things that have been highlighted in the showcases have not come out when they said they were going to come out. And I understand development can be difficult. I'm not blaming the developers in any way, but there's sort of been a precedent set that when you tell me a thing's going to come out in spring, I'll see how it is in the fall.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit in the seven to eight range mostly because like some of the great games from Tomorrow Corporation are a little long in the tooth, right?
Yeah.
We've played them before on a few machines.
Yeah.
And the games that really excite me that are kind of coming from the other platforms like Inside or Stardew Valley, for example, like those games aren't out yet, but we have an awesome lineup of really quality titles, and that's growing with games like Mario Golf, and obviously after the 6 month mark, we've got
Golf Story.
What did I say?
Mario Golf. Yeah, that's all right.
Oh, sorry, Embargo. No, it's not. I totally messed up. SteamWorld Dig 2, obviously, just came out as well. So if you start including these games, I think we're up there in the 8 and 9 range at the end of at the end of the year for me.
Yeah. I'm 8 and 9 already because part of that to me, and this I'll just say this real briefly, like every indie developer I've talked to, like, is really happy with what Nintendo's been doing for them as well. Every indie developer I talk to is like, they've been really supportive in getting us on there and getting us, get the games working.
That's so cool.
I talked to the developer of Kingdom New Lands, which came out on Switch earlier this year, and he was just saying, Nintendo's just been so supportive of us and, like, so great in getting this stuff working. And, like, New Lands is a phenomenal game that, like, we're at the point where there are great indie games that are getting lost in the Switch shuffle.
Severed, for example.
Severed. Which is like, that's an impressive amount of indie games if you can like be missing them now too. It's something to talk about.
I hear you. So let's spend a minute here also on kind of OS and tools. We already pointed that out. You know, what's the health of the platform? I think we're all happy with hardware and like some of the features like the sleep mode and how nice it is to take with you and dock and all that, sync controllers. But how do you feel about the OS and the tools that are available so far?
I've kind of changed, and maybe this isn't quite the answer you're expecting, but like I've kind of changed my perspective of the Switch since before it came out. Like before it came out, I was very much like, oh, it's not going to have like a browser on launch. Mm-hmm. Like that's very, like I don't like that. It's not going to have Netflix like my Wii U does and like all that sort of stuff. And now I'm just kind of like, I just play it on the train when I don't have Wi-Fi anyway, and like I don't really need those things.
Sure.
So like where I started kind of unhappy about the core services, I've like become much more kind of like, all right, you know what? I'm not using it for those things. I have other things to do that, and I'm content with where it is right now.
Yeah, I really like the Switch's interface a lot. I don't think I necessarily, like you're saying, like I don't necessarily need a web browser.
Yeah.
I think that stuff, Netflix web browser, that'll probably come down the line.
Yeah.
But I feel like as a from a launch perspective, I think out of the box, it's a very elegant interface, and it doesn't, I don't know, like interfaces to me, it's just fine. Like,
and
but this one is particularly good.
And they did some fast follow improvements for like store, for example, you know, they launched, if you remember, without being able to store your credit cards and like now it's super easy for me to just download games and add them. And the interface is simple. It's simplistic, but it's also very well designed for a machine that you take on the go.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there could be more frills. I'm with you. I mean, for me, it's like software wise, I mean, definitely the big issue is still with online. Being able to see which ones of your friends are online through an easy interface, not having to always use your phone and all that. Obviously voice chat is still a problem, and I'll knock off points for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like in the 6 to 7 range on kind of like services available. Mm-hmm. I'm way happier with the hardware
overall. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm definitely in the mid to high 8s range when it comes to just satisfaction with the hardware, how reliable it is, how turnkey it is, how cool it is to play. But services, I feel like online is still an issue. And then, you know, support of services like Netflix, you know, or YouTube, I still feel like this device, it has a kickstand. It's so convenient. It'd be awesome to just like log into Wi-Fi and use it as a video viewing device.
Hardware for me is a 10 simply because when you click in the Joy-Cons, it snaps on the screen.
That's it.
The sound. That's all you need. But yeah, I'm with you with the services. It's sort of the thing where I use my phone for Netflix in bed all the time.
Yep.
I would like a slightly larger screen. I don't want to go buy an iPad right now.
Yep.
And I have this. I would like that. And I think they're coming, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So overall impression of the Switch and the hardware, are you guys fans?
Yes.
You're sitting here on Nintendo voice chat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we're a little biased, but I'm in love with this Switch.
It does,
I think it's great.
It delivers exactly what I wanted from it, right?
Yeah.
Like, which is, I probably would not have gotten to 100 hours in Zelda if this thing didn't perform on the go as well as it promised it would, right? Like it fulfilled what I was hoping from it, which is I can pick up my console game and just play on the train.
So actually, you know, I don't know, I have to go back and listen to old NVCs, but like it actually surprised me, and I like it a lot more than I thought I would like it. You know, I'd like before when I heard the concept, there was always this worry about power. Will power keep the games down? Will they just not look as good? Will it feel like playing an older machine? And then once I got to actually hold it at a pre-release event, I'm like, the system just feels so good.
Yeah.
You know, the way the controllers feel and everything, it's just such a great, great experience.
Yeah, just the manufacturing of this thing itself. It is comfortable. It's cool. Like I admire it as a thing that I own. Like it's just a cool thing that I love to play around with and even just hold. Like this is fun.
So I think it's safe to say we'll look forward to seeing what the future will bring for this device. I mean, it's kind of
cautious
crazy.
Optimism.
When you got Mario and Zelda in the first year, and you know, there's a Metroid coming, obviously, and there'll be a Smash
Pokemon,
Brothers coming, there'll be Pokemon coming, and there are all these other franchises that we haven't seen in a while, Advance Wars, that we would love to see in the system. It's just, I'm really excited to see what comes in the future.
I hope it doesn't kind of hit that Nintendo doldrum that comes in a system's later years.
Yeah.
But I mean, they haven't given us a reason to think it will, at least so far.
Yeah, and they're still,
I don't know,
I mean,
they already told us that Kirby was coming in 2018.
True.
Look at 3DS. We're talking about a system that is pretty long in the tooth and that we just had a new Metroid game for.
True.
And, you know,
Kirby.
We've got new games still coming out, like Yo-Kai Watch, even though the Switch is obviously out. So let's quickly check in with the listeners. We only have a couple of minutes left. We're going to the question block. You want to hit that?
Let's go real quick.
Yeah.
So these questions we pulled them from Twitter this week.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at NVC Podcast. We're over here at NVC Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Or is it Nintendo Voice Chat Podcast?
Yep.
I always forget.
Just search
anyway,
Nintendo Voice Chat. It will be there.
Yeah. Kieran Feifeld asks, what kind of increments do you think we could see for future Joy-Con iterations? Analog triggers and true D-pad are the obvious ones. I'm going to go ahead and just vote a Googleplex of color schemes. I think mm-hmm. we'll see a million different color schemes, custom ones for games, limited edition, collector's edition ones. Yeah, I think that's going to be their big play for Joy-Con.
I would be surprised if they didn't issue a Joy-Con left with a D-pad for the release of mm-hmm. Virtual Console, whatever that shape that takes. Yeah. Like, I think the D-pad iteration is a safe one. I think right now they just want to establish this machine and say, it is great to play any game. This is the perfect device. You can play racers, whatever. But as you get deeper in the life cycle, I'm with you, Kieran. I think they will take little iterations and give you special releases packed in with certain games. We'll see what form those will take. I can imagine a whole bunch of them, you know, obviously with for racing games that optimize the controls and
D-pad is the big one though.
Yeah. And I wouldn't put it past them a couple of years down the line to issue like a Joy-Con Plus in the same way that they did the motion controller.
Well, Tom wants the trackball for StarCraft.
Of nice.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
StarCraft
Twitch. A mouse
Twitch.
That you slide onto the side.
Yeah, yeah, a mouse, and then you move the system over the exactly. table like that.
Well, that
yeah.
was the implication when they first revealed it. They were like, well, you can slide, obviously there's the grip on the side, but
right.
you could also put anything they want onto
on
this.
Top of it.
As long as it has that little track.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, as long as they do that, they could add weird
I want
actions.
Little Donkey Konga bongos on the side.
Donkey bongos.
Yeah.
Little Konga. Yeah. Little
Then you play with your thumbs. Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. A second question comes from Aaron Beasley. He says, if and when Nintendo releases the virtual console, do you think Game Boy games will be available a la Super Game Boy? Games are portable, yet playable on TV. I don't see why not.
Yeah, I think definitely.
With the Switch bridging the gap between handheld and console, there's no reason not to.
They're going to double dip. I mean, they did this with the Wii U and the, you know, like they will bring back their classic catalog and they'll make them playable. And, you know, this, I feel like, Game Boy games look a lot better on a small screen on the go than they look on your television screen. Mm-hmm. I think they will definitely.
Yeah, I mean, we see Game Boy Color games and Game Boy Advance games on previous virtual console iterations, you know, 3DS, stuff like that. Like, I don't see why the original Game Boy can't make a reappearance.
I want GameCube for virtual console. That's the thing I want them to dip into.
They're never going to do it.
It's a little harder.
It's going to be the GameCube classic.
Fine, no, give me Pikmin 1 and 2 again.
But I think you will see GameCube games, but I think they will be re-releases
that are on
proper cartridge, like a Sunshine, Mario Sunshine,
like
as a standalone game rather than the virtual console. But who knows?
I'll buy them.
They've done some crazy stuff. And by the way, it is at NVC Podcast if you want to follow us on Twitter. Tiny little feed.
I don't know
Zach personally mans it.
I
so
run
if you
that,
ask a
I
question.
I feel like I should know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But Zach also forgets which one of his names is his first name sometimes.
I have three of them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Very nice. Cool. That's it for Nintendo Voice Chat this week. The crew back in the control room is already like waving at us, telling us to stop the show because they want to go home as well. But
sorry, I slowed everything down.
No, you were awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom. We'll definitely want to have you back, especially if you keep on playing those Switch games.
Oh, yeah.
And reviewing them for
us. Happy to come back.
You know, if you like Nintendo Voice Chat, check out some of our other shows. We have shows dedicated to all the console formats. We still don't have one for PC gamers, but hopefully we can rectify that eventually. You know, check out GameScoop. Check out Beyond, check out Unlocked. Also, some of the new shows we're launching on Facebook. If you go follow IGN on Facebook, you'll see shows like Expert Mode, where we've got a brand new show debuting very soon called Every Ever.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to a format that we've been running for a while where we just do these really cool, visually driven timelines. And the very first Every Ever is
every Nintendo console ever.
Every Nintendo console ever. And it'll be awesome. We'll have really cool CG graphics that show you what all the consoles look like. I think people are really going to dig this one.
Yeah,
so follow IGN and look up Every Ever when it's live.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find you when you're not on the show?
You can find me playing Kingdom Hearts or on Twitter at JM Dornbush.
I'm at Zachary SD.
And I'm at Tom R. Marks.
Be sure to follow Tom if you want to hear the rating for Golf Story, not Mario Golf, early. I'm Per IGN on Twitter, and we will hopefully see you here next week again. Goodbye.